Carvinas, who will talk with us about linguistic and technical training as a community empowerment tool.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody, in this very lovely day. The presentation that I'm going to give now is actually the result of a process of a process that involves different members of an indigenous team of linguists and an external team. So I want to acknowledge all of the members that have worked together and that have their work has resulted in this presentation. So the members of the Mayagna Yogaran Yangbauna, the local team of linguists, are Demetri Antolin, Susana Budier, Modesta Dolores, Gloria Family, Tomasa Gomez, and Elizabeth Salomon. And these members have collaborated along the years with an external team of linguists led by Elena Benedicto, and I am also part of this team along with Alison Eggleston. And both Elena and Alison are rooting here for me, and I hope not to disappoint them or you. So let me start the talk by itself, because I think that's what you came here for. And just a small caveat, I move around. So I teach, and that's what I do with my children. So all the same too. So I'll talk about how training can be used as a tool for the self-empowerment of the local indigenous community. And I've divided this presentation into four different sections. I'll introduce the topic and the setting and the framework that we're working with, what they're working on. And then I'll talk about the specifics of my work that, or my involvement in the project over these last 2 to 3 years, which was the training component. I will talk briefly about linguistic training, then I will talk about the core of this presentation, which is the technical training. I will present to you the results of this training, per se, and finally the conclusion is the how these results apply to the wider scope of the whole project and of the whole approach. Okay, so we'll begin, surprise, surprise, with the beginning. And so we talk about the introduction. Okay, the team, the local team of linguists, is the Mayagna Yogaran Yangbauna, and is a team that is comprised exclusively of speakers of the language, of Mayagna. This language is a Misumalpan language, belonging to the Misumalpan family, and it's spoken in northeastern Nicaragua and southeastern Honduras. If you want more details on the language, you can ask me later or ask Elena, and she presented the actual location where we do work in her presentation, and I didn't want to repeat that, but I will be very happy to answer some questions on the location or with the participants. But the important part is that the team of linguists that we are working with are speakers of the language, are members of the speaking community. And the approach that we're implementing is the Participatory Action Research Approach, or PAR, which, as Elena said, and also was presented by Alison yesterday on the poster session, has as a goal the rebalancing of power between the external researchers who are interested in the language and documenting and revitalizing the language and the members of the speaking community. So that's the main goal of the language and of the approach. And to do that, there are three components: the community component that meets with the research component. And these two meet and collaborate and talk through training. And training is actually what this presentation is about. That's what I'm going to talk about. So the second part is training. This training can be divided into two different components: a more linguistically specific training and a more technical training. So let's talk, as 2.A says, about linguistic training. So since the creation of the team in the mid-1990s, when Elena and Ken Hill were starting working on the language on Mayana, since they had been called by the community, as Elena pointed out, two talks ago. I don't know if that talk can be used as a measure of time, but I'll do it. As an L3 speaker of English, I'll do it. Since the creation of the team, there have been different workshops, linguistic workshops, that have allowed the team to make decisions on the research, since they had the tools, the linguistic tools, to know what they were doing. They had the ability to decide what the research would be about, and also to perform the linguistic analysis which would result from that research. So they would be the actual linguists. And so that's the whole point of linguistic training. Okay. But the second component of training is the technical training, which is the part that I have been most involved with since I joined the project. I think it's going to be 3 years ago now, more or less. The team, through these years, has has been provided with different tools or different equipment. The most important is laptop computers. Now the team has different laptop computers, which are very important because they provide the team with autonomy, accessibility, mobility, and ownership. Okay. The team with those laptop computers do not need the external researchers and their equipment to do the work. So they are autonomous in the doing of the work. They can access different areas in which they want to do research. They can also move around and go to more remote areas or more remote communities in which there might be no electricity, but they still are able to collect data or to input data into the computer. And it also provides them with a sense of ownership of the data and of the research, because since they have the equipment, they do own what it's being done. Other pieces of equipment that they have or that they can use is a video camera, which is maybe one of the latest additions to the technological equipment. Different audio recording devices. We have been mostly using cassette recorders. They're easier to use. They do not usually need electricity, just they're powered with batteries, so they're easier to use. But they have also used the inbuilt or built-in. The built-in devices in laptops to record, and sometimes we have used digital recorders, not as fancy-schmancy as the one that we have here. Okay, so that's the equipment. And with that equipment, we started doing training, or I was responsible for conducting that training. And that training was divided into four steps for the purpose of the whole project. The first one was the training on the use of audio and video equipment for the recording of new data. The second step was the conversion of that data into a digital format. If we were using tape recorders, we would convert them from analog to digital format. If we were using the digital camera, the digital video camera, the only thing that we would need to do is to import the images, the video files, from the video camera to the computer. We would do the transfer of that digital data into LAN software for annotation, and finally, obviously, the annotation and transcription of that data using LAN. Okay. Let me have a KitKat break here, and another caveat number two, if you will. All this training workshops that we did were conducted in Spanish. Spanish is the majority language of the country of Nicaragua, and it's a language that I'm fluent of. I'm fluent in, not fluent of English. And I understand that doing that perpetuates the neocolonization perspective on on linguistic research, because it's external researcher who comes in and uses the majority language to do all that training. I do understand, and it's something that gives me a great sense of guilt. I don't have the ability in my Yagna to conduct workshops in my Yagna. I wish I would be able to do that, and hopefully in the future we will do all those workshops in, and the goal is to do all those workshops in the local language. So that's the end of the KitKat break. So let's see all the four steps in those trainings. Okay. The first was during those workshops, we did training on the use of audio and video equipment for the recording of NIC data. We know that we had a tape recorder. We used the recorders that are built in laptops. We used video cameras. We use digital recorders. And I showed them, before going to the field, I kind of did some my own research and trial and error how to do it seamlessly and without too many tries. And so I could teach them how to do it. Once we did that, we converted that data into digital format, so it could be used using a LAT. So there are two types of conversion. First, the conversion of analog sound files into digital format, and the transfer of digital video files into the computer. So we didn't have to convert them to digital since they were digital already. So for the conversion of sound files, we used the tape recorder, the computer, and I prepared one handout, and hopefully it'll come. I prepared one handout to do that. Again, I used Spanish for the handout since it's the working language between and the language of communication between the team of local linguists and the team of external linguists. And we had this handout, this short one, using CoolEdit Pro, one program that we could get hold of, how to convert the analog sound files into digital format. And there were step-by-step instructions on how to do that. All the members of the team kept their copy of the handout so they could do it without me or without any other member of the external team telling them how to do it. So then they could do it by themselves and had all the steps one-to-one. It took some time, and it was fun to do though. So let's go back to the presentation. For the transfer of video files, we needed the video camera, again, another computer which I had, and I developed yet another handout. And again, following the same steps, I created a PDF file with all the instructions, and I took snapshots of or screenshots of the computers that they would be using, so they wouldn't be confused. And again, step-by-step instructions on how to do the whole transcript, the whole importing of data. Okay. So this was step two. We already had now, after these two steps, we can have all the data in the computer stored in pre-specified folders with in digital format that is readable by LAN. So the third step is the starting using LAN software, a free software that most of you know, developed by MPI. We think that it's, although sometimes it's not as user-friendly as one would hope, it's good enough and it's free. So that's an added advantage. So again, we had another part of the workshop devoted to the importing of data using yet another handout, again in Spanish, and using all the step-by-step instructions on how to import and how they would do it using the laptop computers that they can have access to. So, and how to record the name of the file, et cetera, et cetera, so they would always be able to keep track of where the file was and the name and the date, etc. Okay. I also developed a template for to facilitate the transcription process, since we would be always be working with either spontaneous stories or interviews. I created a template with different tiers, the ones of you who know how LAN works, you know that you can create different tiers, and I created 8 tiers that could be modified, but that was the template that I developed, and they had 4 tiers for the transcription or the annotation in Mayagna, and 4 more tiers with the translation in Spanish. For these tiers, actually, the purpose of these tiers was only the annotation of that data, not yet for the analysis. We know that for the analysis, and the next step might be to create additional tiers for the analysis of the different elements that we want to do the specific analysis on. If Elena was talking before about the use of modals, so we could create a tier for modals and how to identify them, etc., and the different morphological forms that they take, etc. And the fourth step, once they created, they used the template, they had imported the audio or video file, was the transcribing the data into LAN. So here is what we have. We have, here is one of the video sessions, one of the latest video sessions that they recorded. They had imported, they imported the sound, and we trained them, or we did some training sessions on how to do the actual annotation. And you see that we did how they would do it, and actually this is a made-up example that they use as a definite example of Mayan. Anyway, and again, I developed yet another handout for the completion of existing files. So it is obviously, as you know, that transcription and annotation takes a very long time, and you cannot finish the whole process in one day. So how they would do to go back to a previously worked on file and work on that. So developed yet another handout that, oops. There you go. Oh, here, there you go. Again, how they would open it and create it and then do the actual annotation. All these handouts, again, were in Spanish, but they found them very helpful. And actually, after very few hours of training or session, they were actually very competent in the whole process, from recording the data, importing the data, importing it into a LAN, and then actually doing the annotation. Here we see a picture of most of the members of the team, that was one of the training sessions, and actually a hands-on training session. Here we were listening to a sample and actually listening it already in LAN and how you could do the annotation. You see Demetrio and Elena, who also learned a lot, I think, from those sessions. So those sessions did not only benefit the internal team of linguists, but also the external team of linguists. And so Demetrio, Elena, Tomasa, Susana, Gloria, and Modesta. So what is the result of all this training, of all these steps, of all these handouts? What has happened? What has happened? What has come out of this? After the training sessions were completed, the team was able to do all the process by themselves, from the recording of the data to the actual annotation and transcription. And here we see one of the latest sessions in which we see 4 members of the team working by themselves on the annotation of data that they had collected and imported into the computer. And actually, maybe you cannot see it very clearly, but here on this computer we see Tomasa working on LAN and doing annotation. And we see all of them. And we see Elisa doing, actually, I think she's using headphones, so using the importing or listening to a sound sample. So after all this training and after all these hours, they were able they empowered themselves. They learned to do the whole process by themselves. And all this data that was collected by them and annotated by them will be later be used in the bilingual education program, in radio broadcasting programs that they run, and for cultural revival activities. Meeting one of the major goals of participatory action research is that all the data collected has to be used by the community, has to be useful for the community. So what is the overarching conclusion of this process, of this training process in PAR? The training component of PAR contributes to the self-empowerment of the team of local linguists, strengthens the position of the speakers of the language as agents in the whole research process. They are the ones who do research. And they are also not only the ones who do research, but they're also the ones who can make the decisions on what to research, since they know how to do it from scratch to the very end final product. They can decide what they want to do. I think that was everything I had to say.
So, I'm going to thank Ricardo Díaz. He doesn't have Kilda on.
I really enjoyed your talk.
Thank you.
So, in a project I was involved with, we trained a group of community linguists in a similar manner, slightly lower tech. But one thing we discovered sort of about 2 years into the project was that equipment malfunction in this kind of sort of rural environment got to be such a big problem that we ended up sort of going back to typewriters and notebooks because it ended up causing such problems for work. I'm sort of wondering about that sort of very practical tech level in your project. Have you experienced any sort of issues like that?
There are always problems.
Yeah.
There are always problems. And you lose data sometimes. And you want to help it. It's not that you cannot help it.
Yeah.
They are all very proudly owners of USB drives now.
Right.
So we make sure, one of the parts of the process, but to make sure to always have a backup copy of everything that they do. And if the computer were to malfunction for whatever reason, and some of the computers that they're using are old, I donated one of my old laptops when I was converting into a newer version. So that laptop is getting older, and the whole goal would be to be providing them with a newer and newer technology. But that happens. But an important part was to make sure that they always kept in a safe place backup copies of all the data. We haven't gone back to typewriters and notebooks. Notebooks are important, and they do take notes, especially older members of the team who are still a little afraid of using computers do take notes manually. But altogether, we encourage everybody to use the computers and to befriend the computers. And to not be scared of them, so they can use it, because then they see the benefits of it, of retrieving the data and manipulating the data and all of that. So I don't know whether I'm answering your question or not,
you are very much
but
yeah.
We know that accidents happen, and there's electricity shuts
question.
Down, and then.
So when a computer breaks down, how long does it take to get it replaced?
Well, it depends. We go either myself. Well, I didn't go last time anyway. Or Elena, who's leading the team of external linguists, we go there every 6 months, more or less,
uh-huh.
in December and June, July, August, depends on what works. So now most of the members of the team own their own computer, their own laptop.
Uh-huh.
It's theirs. And then, so that, did you bring one last time? I don't know. But
we did. But there is some members of the Mestizo town where they meet.
Mm-hmm.
There is a small group forming of people that have created, have an internet cafe. And they know how to fix computers.
Yes.
The older computers broke down much, much, much more often and worse than the new laptops. New laptops are more resistant. And with the new ones that we have been bringing, we haven't had any problems yet.
See,
but we are still using, for recording, for instance, the little tape recorders. I'm sure that if there is any phonetician here, they're going to kill me. But those are the most resistant and very easily replaceable.
I'm wondering if you could comment a little bit about the technological situation in the community. It sounds like there's an internet cafe, so
right.
Maybe it's not quite so rural. Because this seems like almost a secondary step. Did you have to train people to be able to use computers, period?
I didn't. I joined the project in mid-2006, so 3 years ago, roughly. Elena and the people who had been working with her had gone there over the last 10 years, and I hear all these stories on how there was no electricity in the beginning, and then they started having electricity. When I first went in 2006, we had 5 hours or 6 hours of electricity a day. The last time I went, we had 24 hours of electricity a day. So, yes, they had to be trained on how to use computers. When I got there, they were already familiar with the computers. Maybe they were not familiar with laptops and that they could take them everywhere they wanted, but I didn't have to do this primary step. But yeah, I'm sure that there was that first step, but I didn't have to, I didn't participate in that first step. Yes.
I would like writable electronic copies of your training handouts so I could change the Spanish to English and use those.
They are very useful, I have to say.
Elena has been asking me for copies and copies for her own use, so.
Has he given them to you?
Yeah.
Oh, no. The training session, I did my own research and doing simple enough steps, but they were adequate enough to do the annotation and the whole transcription myself. And I had, I'm not an expert by all means in Elan, but I'm an expert in the small steps of Elan. And that's what I've been using. And actually, Elena and other people in the Indigenous and Indigenous Languages Lab from Purdue, we have been holding some small workshops on the use of Elan, and Allison has also benefited from that. So it's a good thing that it has benefited not only the local team of linguists, but external. Yes?
I'd like to ask a couple questions about community. I guess I'm concerned about seriously, how the community need this whole project? How did the project start? Also, the last bit of data is going to be, will be used in the bilingual education program, radio broadcasting program, the cultural development, bilingual activities. Could you make a little more comments on so that how it started, the beginning, and also?
The beginning, again, I wasn't there in the beginning
right.
of the project. I'm very young. Anyway, in the beginning, the community called for external linguists to help them in the documentation or revitalization of the language. And they called Ken Hale, and then Elena came after Ken Hale, and I came significantly later with Elena and then Allison. So I wasn't there, but it was the community who asked for help or the aid of external linguists. And the use of the data that they collect, that is collected in the project. Eventually, the whole goal is that we become superfluous in the whole thing, that we are not needed. We have no say on what they want. The whole goal is that we have no say on what they want to do with data, what data they want to collect, how they want to annotate it, transcribe it, and analyze it, and how they want to use it. But the whole purpose is that everything that is collected has to be returned to the community. It can be used by external linguists in the fancy-schmancy analysis that we do, and me being a syntactician, yes, I'm very interested in certain topics of the language. But everything that we do has to have a result, a return to the community. So the stories that have been collected where they wanted to recuperate the stories by elders or to know their traditions or to know the traditional technology of the community. And that's the data that has been collected, but they decided what data was collected. And since that data is collected, then they can broadcast it in the radio programs that they're having. They can be use it. They can use it in the bilingual education schools, in books for textbooks for children, or recuperating the traditional technology.
Have they decided which direction they are going to go to?
No, I don't know what their step is going to be. It has to be theirs, not mine. But Elena, I'm sure, has something to add to that.
Most of them are teachers, so they are participating in the textbooks were designed in the mid-80s, and that first step was basically a translation of the Spanish books. So they realized that the traditional knowledge was not there. And so in the second step revision that they are doing now, they are trying to incorporate as much traditional knowledge as they can. And so, for instance, one of the things they want to incorporate is the leaders, the old leaders' stories, traditional leaders, heroes, and things like that. So that part of the story is going to feed that part of the new textbooks that they are collecting. Yeah.
This just occurred to me that it would be nice to have a conference where everybody got to give their talk on the first day, and then we had 3 days knowing what people are doing to talk with them about it. Thank you, Ricardo, and we can talk with Elena and Allison about more about what they're doing.